The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Oh, it could have been Kelly with your 99-1 on Brooksy.
Well, could have been.
I'm sorry, man. Another second place finish for you.
Yeah. The third this year, thanks to John Rahm alone.
John Rahm. Oh, I'm glad at the end of the Beating the Book Masters preview, at the very end, I said to you guys, I'm like, you know, we haven't brought up John Rahm. Anybody have any thoughts on him?
He looked pretty darn good this weekend.
On the show, there's so much to talk about today. Got to talk about the Masters, the betting implications, and the, sort of the betting lessons of that. We'll talk baseball with Paul Spohr. Todd Wright will join us. Hey, how about that? The greatest voice in the history of sports radio. Todd Wright will join us. All night with Todd Wright back at ESPN Radio back in the day. Talk Masters with him as well. Wes Reynolds will join us at the end of the show to talk golf and baseball as well. I want to talk NBA extensively today now that the postseason, and not the full postseason, but the play-ins have been established and four of the playoff series have been established. We were dead on Friday, absolutely dead on Friday when we was talking about how none of these teams could afford to manipulate anything. They all had to win. There were no shenanigans that were going to happen in terms of the teams that were, you know, that, you know, from the Clippers' perspective, for instance, is the lens through which we viewed it. Yep. We're like, no, they can't manipulate this. They have to try to be fifth because they can't afford to be seventh. Now, the Mavericks, another whole story. We'll get into all that. But let's start with golf. And John Rahm wins on the, again, as Jim Nance pointed out many times, on the 40-year anniversary, the 40 years after his hero, Seve Ballesteros, won his second Masters, Spaniard. John Rahm wins his first, his second major, his first green jacket, four-stroke win, over both Phil Mickelson and Brooks Koepka. Kelly's T2. First of all, let me just sort of ask this. John Rahm, by the way, from Sean Martin at PGA Tour, S. Martin. John Rahm has more wins, 20 in pro events, than missed cuts, 15. 20 wins, 15 cuts career. That says it all. It's not quite Tiger, but it's Tiger-esque, if you know what I mean. Let me just ask you, Kelly, right off the bat, beyond betting, we'll get to the betting here in a second. What's more noteworthy? That Phil Mickelson, crooked cop, finished tied for second at 52 years old, which is the oldest anyone has ever finished in the top five at Augusta. Is that the most noteworthy thing of this? Is it Rahm just, you know, because Rahm played that back nine brilliantly. It was 3.5 yards in a cloud of dust. He was just playing it out. I'm not taking no chances. We're just going to run out the clock here.
Yep.
Was it Mickelson finished second? Obviously, beyond Rahm winning. Is it Mickelson finished second? That Scheffler played as ho-hum as he did and managed a top 10 tie, T10, or that Rory, under the best conditions possible, right, he had the weather in favor of him, and when we talked about this pre-flop Thursday, Friday, missed the cut entirely.
I don't even think it's close. By far the most shocking thing of all the things you just listed is how well Phil Mickelson
did.
Yeah,
I think you're right. I think you're right.
It's that one and then Rory probably two. Rory is probably two of how poorly he played and just never, I mean, was never in it. Was never even a part of the discussion.
No.
You know, Scheffler played great. He played great. He just couldn't putt. Tee to green, he was awesome. Tee to green, he was second in the field. Finished second in the field behind John Rahm, tee to green. Just couldn't putt.
Couldn't putt till the last day. But what a performance by John Rahm, who, again, had, you know, again, our conventional wisdom before, how everybody talked about, oh, the weather's going to be this for these. But Koepka had it in his favor right on Thursday, and it was set up beautifully for him for Friday. John Rahm didn't have any of that, still won the tournament going away. Maybe we overrate such things. But in this tournament, that was a stop-start tournament also.
Yeah.
To overcome all that, good on him. He deserves it. He was awesome.
I mean, I think that's the best player won out, right? Yep. I mean, that is the guy who was, he was put in a hole because of that, because of the starting times. It, we did mention a lot leading up to the tournament and ended up kind of playing out exactly like we thought it would. Sometimes that's not always the case. That's why we always try to warn, don't make those or overrate those factors, but it really did end up playing out as almost exactly like we thought it would with the weather. Like you said, Rahm on the bad side of that comes into Sunday down four shots, immediately makes that into two, and, you know, cruises on from there. And Brooks Koepka really didn't even challenge. I mean, that last round and a half, he was really never a threat.
Well, it was an eight-stroke swing, right? He started the abridged second round, the reconvened third round early Sunday morning. Four strokes up, he finishes four strokes down. So an eight-shot swing over the course of all of those holes. But I would say this. Like, I don't think there was a moment. There wasn't some signature moment where Koepka gacked it. Like, he didn't have some awful moment here and there. He just wasn't sharp. I think, as Dottie Pepper said it, he just wasn't that sharp. And John Rahm was just played it beautifully the whole way through. Didn't make any mistakes.
Yeah, we were, after the first two rounds that Brooks was able to complete in those first 2 days, I mean, he was number one in the field in approach. His iron game looked about as sharp as I had seen it maybe ever, or if not in a very, very long time. He was playing great, man. Those things just started to become a little unhinged as he went into Saturday and Sunday. And, yeah, I think that they also said it on the broadcast. I don't know how much of a deal this was or not, but, you know, they thought some of the guys having to play through the bad conditions, facing that wind then on Sunday, that it wasn't bad conditions later on Sunday, but it was enough that was different. It was different enough from what Brooks played through on those first 2 days that they thought some of those other guys were in better position to play through it.
Interesting. Well, let's get to the betting implications of this, because I had, again, every other sport. So tennis was a fantastic weekend. Don't believe me, ask Todd. Betting-wise, UFC, thanks to our buddy Jordan Sherwood, was awesome, right? The NBA, which we'll get into yesterday because it's the last day of the National Basketball Association season, the worst last day of any league after what was just a joke of a regular season in many ways, just because of load management, who's playing, who's not, and it manifested the last weekend of the season just perfectly, if you want consistency with that. And so there was betting opportunities yesterday, which I hope people cashed in on, teams that had to win. But then golf was a loser. The Masters was a loser because I had all those Scheffler and Homa bets to begin with. Ain't going to be no matzo ball soup next year, Max Homa. Hopefully never. That's Hootie from the grave, everybody. But I do want to make this point about in-game, in-tournament golf betting. Even if you were not on the right person to begin with, hopefully you took the opportunity to bet John Rahm, if not once, multiple times yesterday. Now, I'm not saying I made all the money back on the golf tournament, Kelly, but I made a good amount back betting Rahm three different times. You could get him at -105 early in the fourth round, early in the final round yesterday. Were you able to make some money back on Rahm?
Oh, yeah. I mean, luckily we have, I know this isn't the case everywhere, but, you know, we've got a couple shops in town and you know, this is where I'll, you know, point out Circa doing a great job with this of yes, no options. So those rain delays, as far as me having a Brooks Koepka ticket 99-1, the rain delays kind of came at perfect times on Friday and Saturday. You know, Saturday, him up four strokes. You got about a round and a half. That was a perfect time to kind of hedge off some. It was -120 on a no price on Brooks. I played a bit of Rahm too then, but I didn't want to go full Rahm because there was still a possibility other guys could get into the mix, which, man, they almost kind of did at the end.
I went full Rahm. I bet the -105. I bet him at -230, -235. Like, I went full.
Yeah.
I got back, as you know, again, I didn't get back most of it, but I got back some of it doing that. And I just think it brings up a broader point about golf betting, which we've made before, which is we're going to talk the nature of programming. We're going to talk about pre-flop bets in golf. This first came up when the FedEx Cup a few years ago on this show, and I had Brooks Koepka pre-flop in the FedEx Cup. But there was a moment in the final round of that, I don't know if it was 2018 or 2019, whatever it was, where you could time it so you could grab Rory, who ended up winning it, and sort of make your pre-flop back, if not more. And I remember the reaction on Monday from people's, why don't you tweet those out? Why don't you text that out? It's not the nature of it. You're moving too fast.
And yeah, we're lucky to get the bets in sometimes.
The point I made then also remains today, which is we don't make this point enough. You kind of have to, if you're going to bet this stuff, you kind of have to be available. And we never, because we're so immersed in this, we never make this very simple point. you kind of have to have a wife or a girlfriend or a family that's going to understand that you need to be available for this kind of stuff. Because it's going to get you out of, if not all, a lot of it, if your preflops are wrong. So anyway, it's just sort of a golf tip. Again, it's the only sport that lasts that long, you know, American sports that we follow. Not American by nature, but I'm just saying, in America, the sports that we follow closely. It's the only one that gives you that long of an arc, 4 days. And, you know, some people who didn't have bets yesterday were talking about how they thought the Masters was overrated. Like, some people said that yesterday to me. I'm like, hey, easy with the Masters being overrated. But I get it. If you didn't have bets and you were just watching Jon Rahm coast into the finish, I get how you might view that. If you had bets, you were engaged the whole time because you were trying to manipulate how to maximize your day financially.
Wait, I like this. I like this conversation, though. Let's just go to the blanket sports talk conversation for a minute.
Yeah.
Yes, I was sweating top 20 bets and stuff like that yesterday. That final round was pretty damn boring.
It was.
Just like on surface.
Well, like I said, 3.5 yards and a cloud of dust. He knew what he was doing.
I mean, that was done. He shut that door, and it was not open back up for, I mean, what, the last 2 hours of the tournament?
It's a beautiful thing. On the other side, I want to talk about, so we mentioned Scheffler finished in a tie for 10th. And so this brings up the subject of dead heat rules, which I do want to give a couple minutes on after the break, because some people like really are having an issue with it. So I want to talk about that momentarily, and then we will talk NBA. From beyond the Mavericks, who just punted on their entire season in the most egregious kind of way, what about these 4 series prices that are up there? Oh my God, the Warriors price. Is that too much? We'll talk about it on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older. If physically located in Nevada, please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. It's a numbers game live from the South Point. So a lot of questions, a lot of people on Twitter, and I'll shout out one such listener, John Womack. Was talking about major underrated book issue that needs discussion is the dead heat rules on top 5, top 10 golf wagers. It's criminal. It's a yes-no wager. It's not first-round leader wager. So he is expressing, I think, what a lot of bettors feel about dead heat rules. Now, let me explain again. Now, dead heat rules, for those who are like, what's a dead heat rule? Dead heat, the stake money on a selection. So basically, it has to do with, on a multiple market prop, right? If you finish tied, so let's take a first-round leader in golf.
Mm-hmm.
If you have like a 50-1 on that and you end up a co-leader after the first round, what you make back is not the 50-1. The stake money on a selection is divided by the number of competitors involved in the dead heat. And the full odds are then paid to the divided stake, with the remainder of the stake money being lost. So let me just—I know I didn't prepare you that there'd be math on the show today, but let's just go this way.
It is one of those stupid betting things. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I almost want to bring Elihu Foistel on the show tomorrow. Elihu Foistel, who's maybe the smartest human being in gambling, who's an author of many books. I think I want to bring him on to do his explanation of it. But let me just try to do it really briefly here, which is, I think bettors intuitively get, when they have like a long shot ticket like that on a first round leader, for instance, and it ties, that they make a fraction of what it is that they made. They're not going to get the full stake. They're going to get a fraction of it.
Right. And that would be like any index prop, right? Like if you were Major League Baseball to hit the most home runs,
correct,
right? And two guys tie,
correct,
three guys tie.
But when you finish T5 or T10, you might end up losing money. And this is where intuitively the average bettor is like, wait a minute, what? So if you had Scottie Scheffler top 10 yesterday, like for instance I did, you ended up losing money on this because the math is, it's, get ready, boys and girls, you ready for this, Kelly? It's your stake plus your potential winnings divided by the number of players who tied, and here's the rub, minus your initial stake. And so the more you bet, the more you lose. So if you bet, Scottie Scheffler, let's say, let's make it a round number. It was minus 120, let's say, to be top 10.
Okay. If 120
you,
bucks.
Okay, if you bet 120 to win 100, that's 220 tied with three other people. 220 divided by four, that's 55, minus the 120 you started with, you lose 65 United States dollars.
Yep.
If you bet 1,200 to win 1,000 on it, right, it's 2,200 divided by four, that's 550, divided by 1,200, you lose 650, right? Trust me when I say this, I get why that seems counterintuitive to you, or intuitively it doesn't make sense. Why should you lose? By the way, somebody gave me an example of a parlay that they hit. Some books allow you to parlay random markets like that. This guy top five, this guy top 10, this guy top five. And they ended up losing money even though they hit three legs and dead heated the fourth. The best sort of example I can give is if you had somebody who was minus a bajillion to be top 10 and he tied with five people, do you get why you shouldn't win anything for that and that you probably should lose? I think we have to have Elihu on tomorrow to give his explanation. He might do a better job than I did. But trust me when I say this, I understand your pain, but it actually makes mathematical sense. I know that's not the answer people want to hear.
Yeah, it's rough. People ask me a lot about this, you know, on Twitter, and we get a lot of questions about this, specifically with golf betting, because I bet a lot of the finishing position markets, like top 20, top 10s. Rule of thumb for me is it's worth about 30 or 40 cents to bet it in a place where there's no dead heat rules.
Because not every book has dead heat
rules. Not every book has. Yeah, and specifically, I'll shout out BetMGM. They're one of the few ones here in the U.S. that doesn't dead heat. We're always talk about price shopping and shopping odds at different books. That's another thing you got to factor in how much that's worth to you. I think it changes person to person, but my rule of thumb is at least 30 to 40 cents, Gil. But it's also one of those like Patrick Cantlay top 20 was my biggest bet of the week this past week. I would have paid more than 40 cents to know I wasn't going to get dead heated on that one.
Yeah. Though again, that's one of those where maybe it makes sense to never play in a dead heat. I don't know if the odds on all their other stuff is as good though, right? Because in tennis, it's with tennis and matches being graded, some have to complete, some have to go first set. You can never anticipate which book will be the better to play at, because if you win or lose, I was good fortune, I lost the one where it had to complete, or I won the one where it only had to go one set. You can never anticipate your good fortune or your bad fortune on those, where you play it. This might be different in golf. Like, you might just want to avoid it entirely is what you're saying, but you have to see what the general odds pool is.
Yeah.
So you can't make that blanket statement.
If I'm not going to play, so for example, right, if it's the, so I played Patrick Cantlay, I think plus 115 top 20, where I knew I wasn't going to get dead heated. Now, if that was 3-1 somewhere else, like, I'm playing that and living with the result.
That's my point.
That's where you have to have in your mind what's that cutoff.
100%. And that's why when people come, you should have played. No, you don't know that in advance, right? In tennis and in golf, there's different odds, and you have to assess where is better to play, even if dead heat rules apply. Let's do the Eastern Conference first in the NBA before we get to it, because the West is juicier. But the Eastern Conference, we already knew the Cavaliers and the Knicks were matched up as the 4-5. We already knew that the Cavaliers, roughly, minus 200 favorites in that series. Here are the Eastern Conference odds to win. Let's start there at the top before we get to the series, I suppose. Bucks plus 120 to win the East. Celtics plus 175. Sixers 4-1. Everybody starting with the Cavs. Double digits. Way double digits and beyond. Those all make sense. All make sense. We do have an issue in Boston though, with cut glass on the hands of Jaylen Brown, and so that could be an issue to monitor. But I think all those prices are right.
Yeah, your two play-in games then, Hawks Heat, that will be tomorrow night. Heat 4.5, 5-point favorite, total 226.5, 227 there. And then Wednesday night, we'll have Bulls at Raptors. Raptors, a 5.5-point favorite pretty much everywhere. 214.5 to 215.5, your total in that game.
Remember, everybody, tomorrow night, 7-8 games in both the East and West. Wednesday night, the 9-10 games. Winner of the 7-8 tomorrow becomes the 7th seed in their respective conferences. The loser will play the winner of the 9-10 on Wednesday on Friday to determine who the 8th seed will be in their respective conferences. That's the play-in system that the NBA had instituted last year. So any thoughts on either of those play-in games in the East?
No, not really. It's lean Raptors for me. I think there was 4.5s last night. That's moving kind of Toronto way. It pretty heavy lean to Toronto for me. Atlanta, Miami, if you could tell me what was going to happen in that game in advance, man, more power to you, because I have no freaking clue. Those two teams have been so random this year. So, yeah, as far as the play-in games, probably be a stay away. Might look live on Toronto.
The two series prices then again in the East. Cavaliers minus 200, roughly. Shop around for these. Knicks plus 160 coming back. You could play it all kinds of ways. Total games in the series. Exact outcome of series. Would you take a flyer on the exact outcome of this? Would you take a Cavaliers in six at a good bang for your buck, double-digit bang for your buck?
That's exactly what I will be betting in this series. It will be Cavs. I'll bet Cavs to win in six and to win in seven. Probably play that instead of the over 5.5 at minus 180. You can get Cavs in 7 at 3-1, Cavs in six at plus 475.
Plus 475.
That's
I'm
the
sorry.
Way I'm going to play this series.
Okay. And then the Sixers, minus 900 against the Nets, who without Kyrie, without KD, managed to find themselves in the postseason without even having to play a play-in. It's Ben Simmons revenge is what it is.
Shoot, he's going to be on the bench for this game. He didn't even play
revenge spot. Sixers are minus 900, Nets 6-1 on the comeback.
This is Sixers 4-1 written all over it. Yep. I'm probably not betting anything in this series. Maybe game to game I'll take it, but
what's the sweep?
Sweep is plus 240.
That's
4-1 is plus 210.
That's not fun. That's not good enough.
Yeah, no. I think this is the one I'll probably be avoiding almost entirely, but maybe game to game.
The Eastern Conference postseason is so much more top-heavy than the West. The West is so much more interesting to get into, which we will, coming up on the show here momentarily. First, though, let's talk some baseball. Paul Spohr joins us on the other side. Home run surge in the in Major League Baseball this early in the season as compared to last year. And what about the NL West? Are we all kidding ourselves about the Dodgers? Let's talk about that. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's a lot to bet on in the next 30 days, and for a limited time, you can subscribe to VSiN for only $9.99. That gets you insight into daily baseball best bets, NBA and NHL playoffs, the Kentucky Derby, and the upcoming NFL Draft. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, tools like our betting splits that let you see where the money and bets are moving every game, also a top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Sign up now for only $9.99 at vsin.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book, Jason H11. I was sweating Rom outright. Spieth top 5 in top 20, as well as a couple others. Yesterday was a marathon sweat starting at 8:30. Loved it. Yay, golf. Nevada Azer, even better when your wife is betting the Masters along with you. Oh, that was to my comment about how your family has to understand. You gotta
be
present.
Yeah, I believe that was our pro tip of the hour. Don't have a family.
Our pro tip is don't have a family at all, or if you do, tell them the Masters takes priority. The Truth, 1980. You made my day in the first segment today by using your foghorn, leghorn voice in the Summer of the Masters. Love it. That's about Max Homa and Hootie from the Grave. Michael Burns, I'm 9-0 in baseball bets. Rays money line train. What can go wrong the rest of the year? We got to talk to Paulie about the Paul Spohr standing by about the Rays here momentarily. Mike Zilla's Duke 90. Regarding excitement, only three back nine Eagles. From the 25 who finished under par, only three back nine Eagles. That's a good point. Usually you see an Eagle fest on the par fives. Bruce Dobigan, has Patrick Cantlay finished lining up his putt on 18? Boy needs a pitch clock.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's something we could talk about.
Gadley, so likable. Touchdown, Jesus. Don't worry. The show's called The Numbers Game. We knew there'd be math. We knew there would be math. There'll be more math tomorrow. Podiatron. Round 1 liter golf. One of my books actually pays full amount. No dead heat split. It was shocking, but they keep paying in full. And Screaming A. Smith adds, that's why it's important to shop. BetMGM pays all ties in full. No DHR odds. Might be shorter, but I'll take the full payout. Well, that's the thing, Screaming A. We were pointing that out in the first segment. It's not that simple, right? You have to be able to assess where the odds are good, where they're better. Is it worth playing at a dead heat book or not? Sam Wesley, this is very similar to horse racing when you take a win place show and the horse places are shows. If it's a 2-1, 5-2, 3-1, et cetera type odds, you lose money. It sucks, but makes sense. Yes, it does. It makes sense. And Corbin, well, no matzo ball soup at the Masters next year. Didn't have the greatest Masters this year. All I know is I had a better weekend than these poor suckers at Augusta Airport with a few hundred private jets flying in and out every day. No, thank you. Shout out against private jets, I guess, from Corbin. Paul Spore joins us. He's got his private jet. He joins us at Spore, S-P-O-R-E, or at Fangraphs. That's not true, Paul. I made that up. That's not true?
No.
All right.
That's not true.
Let's talk about, there's a lot of things. First, though, I brought this up before the break. Will Hill actually planted this in my ear yesterday, which is, he said, are we going to look up in July? He believes we are. And look at the NL West, and we're going to think it's a joke. I don't know if that's his word or mine. But he's going to think, what he was expressing was, we're going to think it's outlandish that at one point the Dodgers were evenly priced with the Padres. That is to say, the theory being that the Dodgers starting pitching is not nearly as good. They don't come, the talent doesn't come at you in waves like it used to, whereas the Padres are built for regular season longevity. They're getting Tatis back. They're getting Musgrove back. Like, they've got people coming as support still. Do you think folks should jump on the Padres at this price? Because it's really a coin flip at this point to win that division.
I do think it's close, but I'm not sure it's necessarily a joke or anything. I mean, Padres have their own issues. They got to get Musgrove back, like you said. Otherwise, that rotation doesn't look overwhelming. I'm big on Seth Lugo. I like the way he's started. I think Nick Martinez can hold, but there are no guarantees there. The second half of their lineup also kind of looks a little shakier. Now, the Dodgers are gettable. I do agree there, if that's the underlying point, is that the Dodgers are not over the top, but they can make a move at any moment too. Like, they have depth in their farm system that they can trade or that they can use. You know, a Bobby Miller or Gavin Stone could come up, try to stabilize that rotation. Looks like Vargas looks pretty good. So does James Outman. So they got a couple guys that are maybe going to stabilize the back half of that lineup. What if they fix Jason Hayward? It's early, but man, I kind of hope they do. So I don't know. I think those two teams are pretty close. I'm not sure that we're going to look back on and say, wow, they never should have been even money. I think the Padres and Dodgers are just close to each other.
Okay. What of the Tampa Bay Rays? We just got a tweet about it. They're 9-0, but they've played, and you're gonna hate me for this. They're actually
a major league team yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, their actual regular season, I think, begins today against the Red Sox, because they played the Tigers, the A's, and the Nationals.
Nah. Yeah.
Okay, so they beat those teams, and they beat everybody that's in front of them, 9-0. They've scored 75 runs. They've given up 18. They have a plus 57 run differential through nine games. It's out of control. They've also hit the most home runs in all of baseball. If there's one thing we don't associate with the Tampa Bay Rays franchise, it's they hit the most home runs in baseball. So I guess the obvious question is, is this sustainable, or is it just because they play the three teams they have?
7-21 is the record of those other teams, and you have to take that into consideration. They're a good team. I think that they're in the mix for sure. I think I gave them away as a team that I'm going for a divisional bet in the AL East there, because I like their price. They're always kind of well-priced, I think, because they don't have superstar talent, so I don't think that the books are necessarily super on them early. I do like the club. I think they're going to be a solid club. I think Wander Franco is going to have a breakout year this year. The Rasmussen Springs combo behind Shane McClanahan gives them a devastating top three. I think Zach Eflin was an interesting pickup. Anytime they're picking somebody up, I'm always taking a second look. Oh, what are they seeing here? You know, they signed him to like the biggest deal they've ever done before. But it's the competition or severe lack thereof. Like, we have to underscore that. There's three dreadful teams, three of probably the worst teams of the year. A's, everyone kind of thinks is the worst. Nats aren't far behind. Tigers have had some people say, oh, well, maybe they come forward this year. They're not that far behind. They're pretty bad too. So it's a hot start. We've seen teams have hot starts before. Sometimes we see teams that we don't expect to be good have hot starts, and we know it's coming, going to come down to earth. This is a team that we expect to be good having a hot start, but it's going to come down to earth. It's just because they're feasting on garbage.
All right, we get to see adjusted season win totals now throughout baseball seasons from sports books. When we do, so let's talk about those bad teams. Who do you think is the worst of those teams? And what adjusted season win, like, how low would you go until you stopped betting the under on whichever club that is? Who's the worst of the bunch?
Probably Oakland.
Okay. Like what would you bet this down till?
I don't know. I still always have a hard time going too hard on a team to lose 100 games. Like, even though they did it last year, because it's just such a long season.
It is.
And teams can morph too. Like, they could bring up a bunch of young talent that starts to rally and play pretty well. Like, they're not a great team. They're going to sit here and try to cape for Oakland in any way, shape, or form. But they do have a few, like, interesting pieces in that rotation. They have some decent hitters, I think, too. So I don't know. It usually stops around the 100 loss mark that I would be that comfortable putting a ton of money on, just because it's so hard to project a team to lose 100.
That would be 62, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think most people listening would be like, oh, I'm going way under on that. Like, I understand your point.
The way they've looked. I totally get it.
Yeah.
But again, we don't see a ton of 100 loss seasons, and we really don't from them. Again, I talked about this last year with Oakland. They're not usually a team that bottoms out. Well, they did last year, and I think they're going to be bad again this year. But usually their rebuilds are a little bit more ordinary, where they're like a high 60s win, low 70s win kind of team. They're not that, and I'm not sure that they're necessarily going to be that this year. But they do have some talent on this team right now with the pitching, the young pitching. And they could have some more talent come through. What if they trade Laureano and Seth Brown? So I don't know. It's hard for me to peg teams for 100 losses.
Okay. You playing DFS these days? If so, what do you like today?
Yeah, I mean, we got game Coors with St. Louis, and obviously I want to get in on some of those St. Louis hitters. They're so rich in hitting. I mean, they lose Lars Nootbaar. They don't even feel it at all with Alec Burleson and Nolan Gorman and Dylan Carlson stepping in. I like Scherzer. I'm gonna go to the well on Scherzer. He's a little bit priced down. He's still five digits over at DraftKings, 10,400. But I'm gonna go ahead and take a shot. I know he's had a couple of mediocre starts. Well, his first one was mediocre. His second one was bad. It's Max Scherzer. I'm not worried. Julio Urias, we all talked about, or we being the general baseball community, said, oh, look out, the shift is going to kill him, or the lack thereof. Yeah, right. He's just having no problems so far. Now, San Francisco is not a huge lineup either, so I don't know that they're necessarily going to bring any sort of damage to Urias today either. So I'm looking at Coors, of course. Now, it's tough to balance the two, to go with aces and Coors. So you kind of have to pick which side do you want to go on there. Do you want to dip into Coors with the Rockies and the Cards, or do you want to go big aces? I'm always down for a pivot, so I might be going for the two aces and not worry so much about getting a ton of Coors stack.
Yeah, almost three times as many homers hit to this point this year than were last year, so it really is creating a lot of opportunities,
mm-hmm,
both in DFS and in props,
pitch
player
clock,
props.
Baby.
Yeah, pitch clock. Helping the hitters. Thank you, Paulie. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
My man. Western Conference, NBA, and beyond coming up.
The Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game, proudly brought to you by BetMGM. BetMGM always running all kinds of promotions, including where you could turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a one-game parlay wager with at least four legs on any MLB game, and if all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back and bonus bets up to $25. Just log into your account or download the app and sign up with BetMGM to get started. Then opt in to the one-game parlay insurance promotion to receive up to $25 back in bonus bets if your parlay with four legs or more loses by just one leg. That's again, if your parlay with four legs or more loses by just one leg. Only at BetMGM, the best place to bet on baseball. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotion not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the hizzy. Kelly, can we shout out Jordan Sherwood, who came on the show on Friday to talk UFC 287 with us? And basically,
shout out.
Basically, you could have parlayed everything he gave us, and you'd have been a winner. Beginning with, you know, some favorite plays. He had Kevin Holland over Santiago Ponzinibbio in the welterweight fight on the main card. There's a KO there in the third round. Kevin Holland, just as pleasant a guy as possible in the ring. Are you okay? Everything okay? I'm about to beat your face in. Right? Like, totally, like, making sure his opponent is okay. But the big one was the underdog in the bantamweight fight. Rob Font got it done against Adrian Yanez. Rob Font, whose face was already puffy, first round knockout of Adrian Yanez. Gilbert Burns was a big favorite. That was easy peasy. And then Israel Adesanya and Alex Pereira in the main event. And Israel Adesanya in the second round just levels Alex Pereira, lights out. Pereira didn't really respect Adesanya's power. Certainly Adesanya did Pereira's. And that one well under the number, the total number on that. So it was just an awesome night of UFC. Shout out to Jordan Sherwood.
Yeah, it was a nice main event was a nice moneymaker for myself. I didn't really end up betting much else because I was doing a show here, and by the time it ended, it was kind of the middle of the main card, and yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see Rob Font.
What show were you doing on Saturday, Kelly? Why don't
Live
you tell
Bet Saturday with Danny Burke, baby, from 7 to 11 Eastern time.
Y'all do 4 hours.
Yeah, 4 hours, Danny Burke.
Well, not to mention
why Tom Check did a great job producing.
Not to mention your podcast duties on Hardwood Handicappers with JVT and Long Shots.
Today, a big day. We got a live Hardwood Handicappers today at 11, live playoff preview from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific time, 2 to 4 Eastern time.
All right, are you guys going to speak about the Mavericks on that show, do you think?
Actually, I don't know if we have time. We already talked about them on Friday a bit.
Well, let me just say this, because this gets into sports radio, so I don't want to spend too much time on this, but were you as angry as I was?
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
No, like, I'm furious about it. I'm still furious
about it. Okay, so I'm glad on Friday, if you listen to this show, I did the whole I feel like I'm really old thing when, you know, people are like, oh, it's load management. Not load management. People are like, oh, the Lakers had a back-to-back. They played 3-4, 4-6, whatever it was against the Clippers. Of course they're going to lose that game. And I, who sound like I'm 110 years old, I'm like, do you think Michael Jordan would have said any of that? Like, this is just, it infuriates me that people accept that. It's like, oh, yeah, it makes sense that they would lose a game when they're trying to get playoff position. Like, are you kidding me? So couple that now with what the Mavericks did on Friday. This is sort of my, like, I feel like when it comes to the NBA that I am 95 years old and people have lost their minds. The Mavericks at that point had two games to win and one Thunder loss to get them into the play-in. This was Friday morning when we were on the show. By game time Friday, against the Chicago Bulls, the Dallas Mavericks had openly told everybody, we're not trying. Luka's going to play the first quarter, and then he's going to be shut down for the entire season. We want to protect our top 10 pick, in other words. It's an unprotected pick. They don't want it to convey. They want to be able to use the pick. And so to get in the play-in would torpedo that. They'd lose their pick. So they openly tanked. Now, I was trying to really crystallize, really distill what it is about this that makes me so mad when I, of all people, love a good tankapalooza and betting on tankapalooza to get, you know, best percentage of lottery ping pong balls. And what it is for me is you can't just do it suddenly like that after you've taken your entire fan base and led them on this journey to the very end of the NBA season, and then all of a sudden pull the wool over their eyes, is that the expression, and just say, yeah, you know what, this whole thing was just one big ruse. We're actually going to save the draft pick. So I know all you, and this gets back to, and I said, I don't want to be corny, but when I was 12 years old or 13 years old and the Washington Bullets were like, they had to win their last game to make the playoffs, it mattered so much to me. Like I was, oh, they got to play the Nets, and they got, like I was that, you know, and I think I speak for all these kids who are sports nerds. That stuff matters to fan bases and to kids. And for you to arbitrarily, it's one. So if you're going to tank, I guess my point is, do it the correct way. And warn your fans for a month or 2 months in advance, like, we're not going to try. The kids will not have any expectations. The fan bases will not have expectation. What are we doing if, in the end, when you played 80 games to present this moment to your franchise, you just arbitrarily decide, well, sorry, it was all one big joke. I was infuriated, dude.
I was livid. I was furious. So we are. Let me take you through live kind of hardwood handicappers on Friday.
Please.
Because we're recording on Friday, and it's comes down to basically all the Mavericks are sitting except for Luka, right? JVT and I are talking through this while we're recording, and we're like, this is bizarre. What are they doing? And then you're like, why is Luka playing? And we're like, well, okay, he said earlier in the week that as long as they were in playoff contention,
yes,
he would be playing the game.
Exactly. I'm
right?
glad you said that. They set expectations.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They did that. So then JVT and I are playing the mind games of like, well, is this the big like FU game by Luka to management? Like, oh, we're going to tank. We're going to go out. We're not going to try to make the playoffs. And Luka's like, screw that. I said what I said earlier in the week. I'm going to go out there, drop 60 on them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, man, this could be a big betting opportunity tonight. Thank God. And I'll shout him out. He likes to fire on Twitter. He tweeted at me and JVT letting us know it was Slovenia night for the Dallas Mavericks that night. That is why Luka Doncic suited up and then played an entire one quarter before checking himself out. So if you want to go to more fan-based things, like you had Slovenia night and the Dallas Mavericks and the superstar from Slovenia played one quarter and then sat out. If you are, I'm more upset with him today, Gil, than I am with the Mavericks franchise.
Oh, because you thought after all this that Doncic would be sour about how the Mavericks handled this, and instead he's like, no, I love it here.
Exactly. Yeah, we actually got some sound from yesterday. Please. We can play this in a moment, but I'll just say real quick before we get to that. Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant. Now, yes, I'm throwing LeBron in there. For as many people that want to hate LeBron, I'll throw him in there. You don't play for that franchise again.
Ever.
This is the NBA. All I ever hear from people on Twitter or whatever is that it's a player-controlled league, and all that matters is one or two guys on the court at the time. You chose to not put two of the top 20 NBA players in the league on the court to give them a chance in the playoffs. You chose to not even take that chance. It's a wasted year of Luka Doncic's career. And if you told that to Jordan, Kobe, or LeBron, they would say, that is unacceptable. I am never playing for this franchise again.
The league is a joke. It's an absolute joke. How many times have I come on here and said that Adam Silver only wants to be friends with the players? That doesn't apply here, but that's really his guiding light. That's his North Star. And instead, what you got that game for the Mavericks was Reggie Bullock, Theo Pinson, Justin Holiday, McKinley Wright IV, and A.J. Lawson on the court. Now, there's a lot of people listening who think I just made up those names.
Yep.
They played for the Mavericks. By the way, how awkward was that final sequence where the Mavericks were shooting up threes to tie the game? Like, you look over at Jason Kidd, and he's so conflicted. So dumb.
I mean, you could tell Jason Kidd hated it too. I mean, his press conference was, hey, I'm doing what I'm told, basically.
Brutal. Now, here's the thing. Do you think the NBA, this investigation, quote unquote, that they're doing on this, do you think they take away the pick?
Do I think what?
Do you think they take away the pick from the Mavericks?
I hope so. I don't know. People are asking me about what they should be fined and stuff. I'm like, there's not a number. There's not a number. Like, I don't care if they lose a draft pick. I don't care how much money they're fined. There's nothing that makes this right. Nothing. Except for Luka Doncic walking away.
If they had any integrity or were as consistent as they claim to be by their words and want to, you know, remember how gambling it's the worst thing in the world. You have Woj out there saying all this fan behavior is because of gambling, right? The whole league for years against it. And now this kind of thing happens. If they have any integrity, they take the pick. But it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen.
Yep. Well, it's not the
right. But I'd love to see it.
I don't know if I feel they should do that because they don't have a precedent. They don't have rules set for this. Put some rules in place,
isn't this
NBA.
Isn't this basically what Stephen Ross and the Dolphins got Doc to pick for doing? Or is what's the difference? Their damn pick. What's the difference?
But I'm sure how it's written in the bylaws or whatever.
He just wants to be friends with everybody, Silver. Anyway, what a joke league. What a joke ending to the season. But I made money betting all the teams that needed to, so that was fun. Last day. We'll come back. Western Conference. We're all stuck to Todd Wright.